You're welcome back to Morning Ireland. It's 11 minutes past 8. And Tánaiste the Leo Varadkar, you're welcome to the programme.
Morning.
Now, I know it's a showery and wet day, but there's a sunny mood about today as businesses start to reopen and you have up to 270,000 people getting their vaccination this week. How are you approaching this reopening? Is it a mix of hope and caution?
Yes, but I think today is also a day of freedom. People can travel freely anywhere on the island. We can meet our friends and family outdoors, indoors if we're vaccinated. Religious services are back, which is very important to people of faith. And from my point of view as Minister for Enterprise, Trade and Employment, we expect to see across the course of the week about 12,000 businesses reopen for the first time this year, and maybe as many as 100,000 people going back to work. So what I'd say really is thank you. Thank you to the Irish people for getting us this far. Thank you to the HSE for running such a good vaccination programme. And also thank you to Irish business, because they've had to make enormous sacrifices over the past few months. And I just want everyone who's in business to know that the government is going to be there to continue to support you financially, to give you a chance to bounce back after a really difficult year of trading.
And they'll be glad to hear that. But what does that mean? You're going to be there and you're going to continue to give them financial support?
Yeah, well, it means that the existing financial supports will remain exactly as they are, at least until the end of June. And by the end of May, by the end of this month, we'll give business certainty and clarity about what happens thereafter.
Can you tell us a little bit more about your thinking around that? Because we've heard you say before there won't be a cliff edge, you and other ministers. But what is your thinking about how you are going to continue to give some form of financial assistance to some of the businesses that are teetering on the brink?
Yeah, so there'll be a number of things. No cliff edge, as you say, but also this can't go on forever. This is borrowed money, so we'll have to be phased out over time. We will make a distinction, obviously, between firms and sectors that are still closed or suffering the most, as opposed to those that will be able to bounce back quite quickly once they're up and running. But things, for example, like the wage subsidy scheme, probably the most important individual action for business, we'd anticipate that staying in place for some time.
At the level that it's at?
At the moment, your turnover has to be down by 30% or more to qualify. You know, that may change, but it'll certainly remain in place for companies that have seen a very significant turnover. But like I say, those decisions aren't actually made yet. They won't be made until the end of the month. So
you'll have to make decisions as well, Tánaiste, won't you, on the PUP payment? Because self-employed people, I think, in some cases, have been able to earn up to close to €1,000 even while still going back to work and doing some work.
Yeah, that's right. But we will make those decisions cautiously. You know, we're conscious that even though businesses may be able to reopen, even though self-employed people can operate their businesses or professions again, it's going to take time for people to actually bounce back, to build up some cash reserves, to pay off some debts. And, you know, things like commercial rates for the third quarter, we're going to have to examine them. Things like tax warehousing, which has been very important for people as well in terms of cash flow. You know, all of those things are being examined at the moment. The VAT rate for the tourism and hospitality sector, that stays at 9% until the end of the year. We'll look at whether we need to extend that into next year as well. So anything that we do is going to be done in a graduated way, recognising the fact that people have suffered a lot. And one thing we don't want to do is withdraw the financial supports too quickly, because we do think there will be a boom in consumer spending now that people are allowed to spend again over the next few months. But that could actually tail off in the autumn. And the last thing we want to do is to be removing government support at the same time as demand falls off. And that's where it's actually at that point the businesses might get into trouble.
And that's a worry I've heard some business owners express already, that you will have the initial return with large numbers, but then, it'll peter out a bit again. What about businesses, though, that won't reopen? And we heard Richard Guiney from Dublin Town talking, you know, quite worryingly about how the retail sector is going to evolve. Up to 30% 30% down on occupancy rates in the main streets of our capital city.
Yeah, like Henry Street would be one of those, for example. And this is something we're going to have to grasp. Retail was changing anyway. It was going online, and the pandemic has very much accelerated that. It's not that there won't be bricks and mortar retail anymore, but there will be less of it. And I had a very good discussion with Mandate, the union in this area, only last week. And you know, the kind of things we're going to need to look at, for example, is training funds and transition funds for some of the workers in that sector, so that they can get new jobs in that sector or other sectors. That's going to be really important too. Another thing is how we can reuse some of those main street buildings for other uses. Perhaps.
Do I feel a task force coming on?
No. I think action more than a task force. But another thing as well we need to look at as well is the whole issue around businesses restructuring. And one thing we're going to get done before the summer recess, this is led by Minister Robert Troy, is a new examinership process. At the moment, if a business needs to restructure, it has to go through a very expensive examinership process through the High Court. And we're going to bring in a fast-track system of restructuring a business. So there may be businesses that actually could survive if they're able to restructure their debts.
Here's the other problem, as outlined by Richard Guiney, which is, you're still saying to people, work from home where possible. You say about 100,000 people will be going back to work. But those people that would come into city centres and town centres and they would keep the cafes going and the restaurants going and perhaps the bars after work and they'd make the impulse buys in the shops, those people are not going to be there through June, July, August, September, perhaps on in towards Christmas. And that's a real problem for the retail sector and for the hospitality sector.
Yeah, it is. Now, it does depend on where you are. You know, footfall in the suburbs, for example, is up, and even in some rural towns and villages because people are working from home. In the city centres, it's down dramatically. But I think that will come back, because we will see in July outdoor dining open, for example. I think people will be very enthusiastic about doing that. And it's really important that our city councils use streetscapes and use the space they have to facilitate that if they can. Probably going into the autumn, then you will see a return to the office in part and a return of inbound tourism. But things will never be the same again. You know, one thing that I'm very enthusiastic about is people having more flexibility about how they work. And this whole idea of blended working, where you might work in HQ or in the office 1 or 2 days a week, but you can also work from home or work from a remote hub. So, when we talk about things going back to normal, it doesn't mean everything going back to normal. What we want to do is to go back to the things that we liked doing and maybe retain some of the things we learned that we also like doing.
Well, let's talk about some of the help to allow us to go back to doing the things we liked doing. We'll talk about the vaccine rollout in a moment. But let's talk about antigen testing. Mm. You may have heard Kingston Mills earlier.
I missed him, unfortunately. Well,
he was essentially outlining to Audrey the role that antigen testing can play. And we know the CMO was quite concerned about people going into the supermarket to pick up a pack of antigen tests along with their sausages and charcoal for the barbecue. What is the government thinking now on the wider use of antigen testing?
Yeah, so the government supports the wider use of antigen testing. We approved a report prepared by Professor Mark Ferguson, the Chief Scientific Officer, only a few weeks ago. And the way we see antigen testing is an additional health and safety measure. It's not a substitute for anything else, for masks or social distancing or isolating if you feel sick and getting a PCR test. It's an additional health and safety measure, and that's the way we should think of it. So we're doing pilots in schools, pilots in colleges could be really important in helping students back on campus in September and October. I know Minister Harris is very committed to that. From my side, we'll be producing new guidance within the next week or so for businesses to give them advice on how to use antigen tests.
They are being used, of course, in business already, aren't they? Fairly widely.
Not as widely as we would like. So we're going to give them clear guidance as to what to do and what not to do and encourage them to do more antigen testing. But I suppose to give you two sides of the coin, and Lidl, I think, is the example here. Lidl is offering all of its staff an antigen test every week, and I think that's a really good thing.
And the tests are flying off the shelves.
Yeah, but what they're also doing, though, is this ad, which I disagree with too. And it was an ad, maybe it was a joke, but it was a bundle of charcoal, sausages and an antigen test. And the message that sends out is that an antigen test is something you can take. It's negative. Now you've got the all clear, go off and go to barbecue, party, socialise. That's the wrong message. If an antigen test is positive, it means that you're infectious. You need to isolate. You need to get a confirmatory PCR test. If it's negative, it really means nothing. It certainly does not mean.
But can it provide people
visit your relatives and think it's all fine? It's not.
But can it provide people with like a belt and braces, that it is another tool in the armory, that it makes people maybe a little bit more confident? They've done everything right. They've followed all the rules. But if they're going to visit older relatives and so on, that it just gives them an added extra in their hope that they are staying as safe as they can.
Yeah, so long as it is belt and braces and keep the trousers on, not just belt or braces. And that's the worry I think people have, is that it could give people a sense of false reassurance.
Could you regulate such things? In terms of sale?
Well, we could, but, you know, there are 16 tests that are approved by the European Commission. The others are not.
I think the test that Lidl is selling are approved.
Yeah, it's one approved. But you know, I suppose the place, the scenario where we really want to use this is when you're doing a large number of antigen testing of a whole group of people. So say, for example, on a construction site or in a college, you don't just test one person and give that one person assurance. You test the whole group of people, and in that way you can pick out a few people who are infected, take them out of circulation and reduce the spread. And it's in outbreaks, it's in those kind of group scenarios that we should be using it, and using a lot more of it, and we intend to.
Would you pay for them? Would the government pay for them?
We are in some circumstances. We have been in the meat industry now for quite some time, and it's been helpful there. But by and large, when it comes to businesses, we're saying that they should pay for them themselves. But they are deductible from tax and as a business expense. Schools and colleges, we probably will, but that hasn't been worked out yet.
Okay. What about now the wider vaccine rollout we're seeing? Do you favour, I know the Taoiseach was talking about it yesterday, making the Johnson & Johnson vaccine available to the 45 to 50 cohort? NIAC is looking at it at the moment.
Yeah, so things going very well in the vaccine programme. I think the HSE has done a great job. We should be in a position to vaccinate about 250,000 people this week. The 2 millionth dose will be delivered at some stage this week. And what we want to avoid, though, is a scenario whereby we have vaccines in storage that we can't use. And that could arise in a few weeks' time. And that's what the Taoiseach is referring
to. With the Johnson, delivery arriving in June.
So it would make sense to me at that point if we had vaccines in storage that we couldn't use, that we would then offer them to people in their 40s. And in fairness to NIAC, in their advice, they actually suggest that it can be used in the under 50s if no other vaccine is available. So we're not at that point yet, but that's the logical thing to do.
Do you expect a decision from NIAC this week?
I don't know if there'll be one this week, but to be honest, it doesn't arise this week. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not in that position at the moment, but we are at the moment vaccinating people in their 60s, and we're allowing people in their 50s to book their appointment. And I'd really encourage people to do that. And it won't be long before we're offering appointments to people in their 40s as well.
The Minister for Health was on the This Week programme yesterday talking about, you know, there'll be an abundance of vaccine available in this country on towards the autumn. Millions of doses of vaccines that we may not need to use in this country. What are we going to do with them?
Well, I think if we get to the point where we have a surplus number of vaccines, there are other parts of the world that do need them. As I speak now, there are healthcare workers in the global south, in the developing world, who have not been vaccinated. We remember what that felt like in Ireland. And I think there does come a point, we're not there yet, where if we have surplus, that we should be willing to donate that to countries that need it. And a bit of that's done already through the European Union, particularly for the Balkans and what they call the European neighbourhood. But I think we're getting to the point that, you know, we need to consider that. And it would be a very important gesture of solidarity, but actually it's in our interest too, because we're not safe from COVID until it's under control everywhere in the world.
A question to you on housing, which is, I'm sure you'd agree, the single biggest challenge after COVID that your government is facing. When and how are you going to address this issue now of investment funds buying up housing estates? And there were further revelations yesterday in the Sunday Business Post.
Yes, so we'd hope to come up with a solution, or we intend to come up with a solution to that in the next couple of weeks. I'm somebody who believes in home ownership. The government does too.
And you believe in investment funds and their role?
If the role is appropriate. If you look at it this way, we need to build about 350,000 new homes in Ireland over the next 10 years. That's a really big deal. It'll cost about 90 billion euros. The state can probably provide about a third of that in terms of investment in social housing and through the LDA and through NAMA and through HIPFI and all those vehicles, but we couldn't possibly provide it all. So, you know, trying to solve the housing crisis without the private sector, without private builders, without private finance, is like trying to box with one hand behind your back. It's not possible.
So on this issue,
but we need to make sure it's appropriate. And what we want to do is use that money to invest in new builds, in new developments that wouldn't happen.
But how do you stop
not what's happening?
How do you stop a Maynooth happening again?
I don't know yet, but we are working up options, and there are options around tax, making the tax treatment of investment funds less favourable. And there are also options around the planning laws in limiting the number of purchases that any one entity could purchase.
It doesn't sound like we're going to get action anytime soon. And this is an important and urgent issue.
Oh, no, it will be soon. And it is an important and urgent issue. Within weeks.
Within weeks, yeah, there within will weeks. Be a development.
And it is, you know, it's. But we shouldn't forget what the overall problem here, and that is a lack of supply. And even when we remove the investment funds, you're still going to see first-time buyers and upgraders competing with the council, competing with affordable housing bodies.
But at least they'll be able to, if they feel, build communities that are invested in homes.
And I think if we're giving anyone an advantage in this very tight market, it should be first-time buyers, not institutions of any form.
All right. Just a brief final question to you. Kate O'Connell, she will not be a Fine Gael candidate in Dublin Bay South in the by-election. She says her working relationship with you never recovered after she sided with Simon Coveney in the leadership race in Fine Gael. Did you show her a cold house in Fine Gael? Did you cut her out?
No. You know, Kate served one term in the Dáil. I think she was a very effective TD, very good on the referendum, very good on her committee work. But Fine Gael is a democratic party. Our candidates are selected by the members locally. This is a very strong constituency, 400 members, 12 branches. And on the day Eoin Murphy stepped down from the Dáil, I made my position very clear that I wasn't going to be taking sides, that I'd put my 100% support behind whoever the grassroots, the activists selected. And Kate obviously has decided that she wouldn't be able to win that vote of local members.
She didn't feel she had your support, and she did come, she took the seat and then came close enough to retaining that seat, but she didn't feel she had your support this time.
The position that I took was that I wasn't taking sides. There are a lot of really good potential candidates in that constituency, and I took a position that as party leader I would allow the members to select the candidate, and unfortunately Kate felt that she didn't have the support of the local membership and decided not to put her name forward as a result of that. Nominations are still open, by the way. I'm sorry she took that decision, but that was a decision that she made herself.
Tánaiste Leo Varadkar, thank you for coming into us this morning.